I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. Late last month, Delaware Governor Jack Markell delivered his State of the State address and a budget proposal for the next fiscal year. He talked about the need to improve education and job opportunities, invest in transportation, including roads and waterways, make Wilmington safer, including cracking down on drug traffickers, or I should say gun traffickers, and help inmates make a more successful reentry back to their community. Jack Markell took office in 2009, and he was until recently the chair of the National Governors Association. And Governor Jack Markell, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's good to be back.
Well, you know, snowstorms are a test for governors and for mayors. We know it from past experiences, and we know from up and down the East Coast. How did Delaware do?
We're doing well. It's been painful. It's been expensive, but we have an incredibly talented and dedicated team of people in Delaware, from our Department of Transportation to the Emergency Management Agency to the National Guard, emergency responders across the counties have done a great job. I'm sure they're exhausted, and I'm sure they can't wait until the warm weather comes back.
You said in your State of the State that Delaware is stronger than it was a year ago. Is Delaware essentially mirroring the rest of the country as we see slow incremental improvement in economies?
Our job growth has outpaced the nation's in the last year. But that being said, I think we'd all like to see it faster. We know the most important thing that we can do is create the conditions where more people get to go back to work today, and also create the conditions where business and employment is going to be, you know, even stronger in the future.
But do you still see in Delaware the effects of the financial crisis? Is that still being felt, even though it's, what, 4 years, 5 years away?
Yes and no. I think, you know, we took a very big hit. We lost two car plants, our entire automobile industry. We lost a lot of jobs in the banking industry. The banking industry is coming back. And just this morning, I had a very exciting event down in Newark at the site of the old Chrysler plant. The University of Delaware is making that into their science, technology, and advanced research campus, and I was there this morning for just a terrific celebration of a big grant they just got from the National Institutes of Health, working in partnership with some local institutions, Nemours, ChristianaCare, and to see, you know, rising from the ashes of that old Chrysler plant, the new health facility, as well as another Bloom Energy, which is going there as well, is very exciting.
I'm curious about the unemployment rate in Delaware, where it stands today.
It's 6.2.
6.2.
Yep. So it's down significantly over the last 4 months or so. But we know that we still have we have to wake up every single day focused on putting people to work, because as long as there's one person in Delaware who wants to work and who's not working, then we have work to do.
And are we talking about long-term unemployed, more recently unemployed, a kind of mix of unemployed people?
I think it's a mix. I think we face some of the same challenges as other places. I mean, certainly when you lose, as we did, two car plants that have been there for decades, and people who had worked at those plants, you know, more than one, maybe more than two generations of a family. But if, you know, if you're in your 40s or 50s and you lose that job, it's tough.
What do you think about what's going on in Congress? And I was reading this morning Republicans in the Senate blocked an extension of long-term unemployment benefits for, I think there's something like 1.7 million people who are getting these benefits. And I'm curious about how that plays out in a state like Delaware.
Well, the way that we think about it, it's really less about state as the state as an institution. And it's more about individual families. And that's how we have to think about all these issues. And that's why we're so focused. I mean, you know, in Delaware, if we're successful at getting a two-person company to expand to four, that's a big deal, because those are two additional families that have a better future. And similarly, when it comes to this issue, we recognize how difficult it is. So it was disappointing that the Congress couldn't get that together, but we have to keep working hard so people can go back to work.
But what do you say to those who say that this is only just kind of feeding the takers of the system? I've heard that language.
You know, I've met these folks, and, you know, people want to work. People absolutely want to work. People are investing in their own job training and their job skills. People are, you know, banging on doors. Our Department of Labor does a very good job, really, as a marriage broker between people looking for work and businesses that are looking to hire. We have to continue to do better. But the overwhelming majority of these people want to work.
And there are jobs out there?
There are. I mean, and this is one of the frustrations. It depends upon what your training is. And, you know, certainly people with the background in science and technology, for example, engineering, lots of good opportunities. If you're a welder, there's a very good opportunity. If you have a good understanding of finance, particularly around, you know, big data analytics, There are jobs. If you know how to work on aircraft frames and the like, there are jobs, information technology. So there are lots of places where there are jobs. That's why one of the most important things that we can do is focus on really helping people develop the skills that they need for the marketplace today and in the future.
And how do you do that?
Well, there's
let's say we're talking about adults, you know, people already in the system. So
well, there are plenty. There are lots of retraining opportunities, and that's important. And I think, you know, we don't limit ourselves just to the adults who are already out there. We're thinking about this from the earliest stages as well. But one of the things that we're doing through our Workforce Investment Board, we're putting together what we call our career ladders. So, and we've started with two industries. One is information technology. The other is what we call the gateway fields of retail and hospitality. And creating visually what these career ladders look like. What are your opportunities? What are the skills you need to get in at the entry level? And how do you demonstrate that you have the skills? What are the credentials that you have to earn? And then how do you move up the ladder? And so that's really been the focus.
I was reading your State of the State address, and one of the things you said, and I'm pretty much quoting here, in fact, I will quote here, only 20% of our kids graduate from high school ready for college or a career. Only 20%.
So here's the situation. What I was explaining is that within a few years, something like 60, 65% of the jobs in Delaware will require additional training, education beyond high school. We have a lot of work to do. Now, the 20% figure, that really comes from the fact we in Delaware do something that I believe no other state does. We have every high school sophomore in the state take the PSAT. We pay for it during the school day, not on a Saturday. And we pay for every high school junior to take the SAT, again, during a school day, not on a Saturday. So our participation rates are significantly higher, close to 100% for those, compared to much lower for other states. And that's really where those figures come from. But that being
nonetheless,
exactly. And I think this is a problem. I think if most states across the country were doing similar measurements, they would find the same thing. And when you think about how much more competency so many of these jobs require than they used to, we have a lot of work to do.
And clearly you, as you say, and other states do as well. But how do you get that number closer to, let's say, 50%?
Well, it's got to be higher than that.
Or 60%, yeah, yeah. 70%. How do you do
so,
that?
So, well, I mean, it's this in itself could be the topic of the entire conversation.
It could.
But it starts, we know we have a very coherent story when it comes to education. It starts at early childhood, and we have made a significant investment. We are seeing so many more at-risk kids who are now enrolled in quality preschools than they ever were before. And that's huge. We think that's a game changer. We have some great things going on through our K-12 system, everything from implementing higher standards, the Common Core standards, elevating the teacher profession through better training, giving teachers much better data about student performance and time to look at that data. And then that's also connected to the work that's going on in terms of college access. So it's really from the earliest ages through college that we're really focusing on all those issues.
And when do you expect to get a return on that investment?
You know, it does take some time. We're already seeing some progress. High school graduation rates are getting better and better. But you know, let's face it. I mean, the earlier that you start with a child, the more return there's going to be for that child. So I think we want to see and expect to see progress every single year. One of the things that we know, for example, Massachusetts, which is widely recognized as having amongst the very best schools in the country, it took a few years. One of the things that they did early is they implemented these higher standards, and so it has paid off for them. And so I think we all have to learn from places like that.
And higher standards means higher expectations as well.
Absolutely, and kids will rise to the level of expectation that you set for them. It's not enough to implement the higher standards; you have to have the proper supports in the classroom and the like. But there's no question, you expect more, you'll get more.
And have teachers bought into this?
I tell you what, the answer is yes. On the Common Core standards, you know, there's been a lot of pushback around the country. There's been a little pushback in Delaware. But one of the things that we did, which I believe was very important, at the beginning of the school year, we had back to school nights where community leaders could come in, and instead of hearing about the politics of all this, they could actually sit in real classrooms and get real lessons delivered by real teachers, these Common Core standards. And when people came in for that, they realized And to see the kind of enthusiasm that the teachers have for it, they realize this is for real.
Let me ask about something else that you mentioned in your State of the State about the minimum wage. The minimum wage going up in Delaware, it'll be something like $8.25 in about a year and a half.
Well, it's going up in chunks, 50 cents. I just signed the bill last week to 50 cents and another 50 cents next year.
And so next year it'll be $8.25
an hour? $8.75.
$8.75 an hour. Couldn't read my own handwriting there. Are businesses concerned about that? Concerned that they're gonna end up paying for that in a sense because they have to pay their employees more?
You know, I think businesses. You know, here's the bottom line: the research is pretty mixed, and so there are some businesses who complain about it. But I think people recognize that this is happening across the country, and there's also a pretty good argument that if you pay people a little bit more, they have more money to spend locally.
And if we're talking about people making, let's say, $8.75 an hour, chances are they will spend that money.
Yeah, exactly. Well, particularly at those income levels.
The president talked about $10 an hour for, I guess, federal minimum wage. Does
he
that make
did.
Sense to you?
Well, I mean, that's you know, I think there are a lot of arguments for and against. We thought this was an appropriate place for us to be in Delaware, but we're certainly following with interest where they are, where it's going nationally. Mm-hmm.
And that's Governor Jack Markell, Governor of Delaware, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. We're talking about the state of Delaware. He just delivered his State of the State address, offered a budget proposal as well. We're talking about some of the issues in that, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times.
I think I said 875 and 825.
825, yeah, okay, yeah. That's fine. Yeah. But it sounds like, and we have about a minute before our first break here, that Delaware is thinking about partnerships, whether with the university, with businesses. Is that how government has to think?
More and more. And particularly, you know, I mentioned earlier this issue of the job training, workforce development. Institutions of higher education are in a great place to provide that training. We have so many companies in Delaware, for example, that have reached out to Delaware Tech, a community college, to provide the necessary training. That's one piece. The other piece is around innovation. Mm-hmm. And that's why those two issues, innovation, workforce development, took up big chunks of my State of the State speech, because that's what our economy needs. We continue to innovate. We continue to make sure people have the right skills. We'll do better and better.
And does it help to be governor of a small state?
I think it does. I mean, I think it's easy to make connections. Delaware's just a fabulous, fabulous state. We've got great employers, we've got great institutions of higher education, good schools, and we've got people who are willing to work together.
And you can get from one end to the other in about, 2 hours?
Depends if you have a state trooper driving, yes, but maybe even a little faster.
Well, let's take a very short break, and we will get back to our conversation. And we do have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. And again, our guest is Delaware Governor Jack Markell. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
Allentown Symphony Orchestra presents Classical Music for Film, Saturday, February 8th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, February 9th at 3 p.m. The ASO performs classical music behind well-known Hollywood movies, such as Barber's Adagio for Strings from Platoon, Schubert's Symphony No. 8 from The Minority Report, Mendelssohn's Symphony No. 4 from Breaking Away, and many more. Featuring a multimedia production, Allentown Symphony Orchestra, Classical Music for Film. For more information, millersymphonyhall.org.
I'm Marty Moscowane, here to remind you that if you are not a member of WHYY, now is the time to do it. We keep you in the know 24/7, and you support this service by making a pledge of support. How about $5, $10, $20 a month? You decide. Here's our phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. We have a challenge this morning from a fan of Radio Times who is challenging you to become a member. If we hear from 100 listeners during the show today, he will give the station an additional $2,000. That's right, $2,000. Thank you, generous fan. We know who you are, and we appreciate your pledge of support. So please respond right now and make your pledge of support. Not only do you know what you're getting for your money, you also get us that much closer to the end of the drive. We don't want to let this opportunity get away. Make a call, 1-888-345-9499, or pledge online at whyy.org. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. If you're just joining us, Delaware Governor Jack Markell is our guest. He took office in 2009, and from 2012 to 2013, he was chair of the National Governors Association. He's also a fellow at the Aspen Institute. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. I have an email in my hand. Someone sent it to radiotimes@whyy.org. And Governor says, kudos to Governor Markell for calling for a 10-cent increase in the gasoline tax to pay for transportation infrastructure, and you did indeed do that.
I did, and it's nice to hear somebody supportive. But I mean, in this case, it's absolutely the right thing to do. We have not increased the gas tax in Delaware since 1995. A dollar of 1995 money is worth 65 cents today, and it's ridiculous. There's no industry in the world that could possibly be successful if you have revenues that do not grow with inflation, but you have expenses that do grow with inflation. And that's where we are. And so if we don't do this, we're going to have a very small amount of money left to pay for roads. And we need to continue to improve our roads, to pave them, to make improvements, as well as bridges. And if we don't, we're just going to fall behind. When you talk to businesses about what they care about, where are they going to expand, having a high-quality transportation infrastructure is incredibly important. We have to pay for it. And it would be nice if we could get something for nothing, but we can't.
How are you going to get the General Assembly to sign on to this?
Well, we have a lot of work to do. And I'm hopeful that as they understand the merits as opposed to what they perceive to be the politics. In fact, I think actually a lot of members of the General Assembly could be rewarded, as this listener did. We are there to do the right thing. And sometimes the right thing is difficult. But here's the bottom line. If we don't do it, all we're doing is we're passing this burden on to our kids who are going to have to spend a whole lot more. Because if you want, for example, to maintain a road, if you don't maintain it, it's five times more expensive than if you do maintain it in terms of, you know, if you end up having to rebuild it. And so it would be, again, it would be great if we could just, you know, say, okay, we're not going to have to do anything. We're not going to have to raise any money. But then we're left with nothing. Other states like Pennsylvania, like Maryland, like Virginia in its own way within the last year have done these increases because they understand that investing in infrastructure is so important. And if they can do it, and by the way, on a bipartisan basis, Governor Corbett, of course, being a Republican, Governor McDonnell in Virginia being a Republican, Governor O'Malley in Maryland being a Democrat, if they can do it on a bipartisan basis, seems to me we should be able to get it done in Delaware.
Are we talking top-to-bottom repairs, or are there certain parts of Delaware that are in greater need for repair?
This is both the sort of, the, you know, not only keeping up with the paving and, you know, making sure our localities have the funds that they need, but it's also some of the safety projects, congestion projects. And these are throughout the state. And, you know, for any listeners who have been recently around the Christiana Mall, they've seen the huge improvements at the Christiana Mall between Route 1 and I-95. Huge improvements over what used to be there. It's expensive. These projects take money, and we've got lots of projects throughout the state.
And I know there's you talk about investment in waterways as well in Delaware.
I do. It's we have basically every waterway in the state, almost every waterway in the state is impaired in terms of not being able to fish, many not being able to swim, and it's embarrassing.
And this is a kind of a toxic legacy?
Yeah, there are toxics in some, from some industrial, some from other reasons, and while we've made great progress in Delaware over the last 5 years, in terms of reducing emissions, we've actually reduced greenhouse gas emissions more than any other state in the country over the last 5 years. We have a ways to go on our waterways. And we've not yet released the details of how we propose to make this happen. But the bottom line, again, don't we have a pretty fundamental responsibility to leave to our kids cleaner water? I think we do. And both of these, by the way, not in the water as well as the roads, not only are these long-term investments in our prosperity, but they also put people to work in the meantime.
Let me ask you a bit about Wilmington, and there has been an uptick in violent crime in Wilmington. And I know from what you said in your State of the State, you want to focus on gun trafficking, the problem of gun trafficking in Wilmington. It's a problem in a number of cities, including here in Philadelphia. What do you propose to do about that?
Well, a few things. So first of all, you know, Mayor Williams has a big job. I think, you know, there's no particularly quick fix, but I think there are lots of, you know, things that we all can be working on together. One of them, as you mentioned, is the gun trafficking. A lot of the gun violence is, in fact, committed by people who can't legally own guns. So I think we've got to do a better job of tracing these weapons back to their sources. So I propose to create a unit that would do specifically that. Also recognize a lot of the violence that gets created is by people with substance abuse problems. We've got to do a better job of treating those problems in the community rather than just in prison. We have, you know, an overcrowding problem in the prison. We have to recognize a lot of those services could be better provided in the community. We also have to do a better job of reintegrating those who are coming out of prison back into the community. 97% of the people who are in prison come out. So what kind of path are they going to be on when they get out? And we've already made some good steps over the last 5 years, but I think we can improve there as well.
Apparently, the incarceration rate in Delaware is higher than the national average and also longer sentences in the state as well.
Right. And I don't think either of those two things is a point of pride. And it's not like it's been working particularly well. So we've proposed a number of things, including not requiring consecutive sentencing, allowing judges to do concurrent sentencing. That would be one thing. The other thing, we have many of the people in our prisons are there as pretrial detainees. In our women's prison called the Baylor Center, 40% of the women at Baylor are pretrial detainees. And we want to pilot a program. It's actually modeled off of a successful program in New York, which supervises some of these people in the community rather than in prison. I mean, let's face it, there are some people who are in prison who absolutely ought to be there, and it's worth every penny that we spend. But I think there are a lot of these people who could be appropriately served in the community.
Are there fears
supervised?
Are there fears in some communities, let's say in Wilmington, a fear of retribution, that if you were to go to the police or tell someone about someone in your neighborhood that is committing crimes, that you could be hurt in response?
This has been one of the challenges for the police in going after the perpetrators, because too often the shooting victims, if they're still alive, don't feel comfortable talking about it for the very reason that you suggested. I think the better and better job that the police do in terms of building ties and linkages into the community, the better we'll do. But certainly what you've raised is a real issue.
And that's Governor Jack Markell, governor of Delaware. And we are talking about all things Delaware in this hour of Radio Times. There's actually a lot to talk about, even though it's a small state. I grew up there, so I can say that. And he took office in 2009, served recently as chair of the National Governors Association. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times for any questions or comments that you might have. Let me get to, it looks like Mike from Clayton, Delaware. Mike, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. First, I just wanted to applaud Governor Markell and Lieutenant Governor Den for the work they've done with the Head Start program and other things, especially legislation for people with genetic metabolic disorders like PKU. It's been very helpful to myself, my family, and others. But separate from that, I have a question about development in the state of Delaware. What plans are there to help incent developers to come back into Delaware and start, you know, growing these areas, whether it be housing or commercial projects, to kind of spark that industry back up in Delaware?
Mike, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Governor, go ahead.
Thanks for the question. First of all, obviously for a developer, whether it's residential or otherwise, they've got to have a sense that there is demand. And we are seeing an increase in home building in the state, as we are really across the country. I was just at the meeting in the National Association of Home Builders, and I think they're feeling better about things after a while of relative weakness. We have seen a number of companies either coming to Delaware or expanding in our state in recent years. And while incentives can make a difference and do, and we've been willing to do some of that, what they're really most interested in is the quality of the workforce. That's number one. And I think it's one of the things that we've really learned over the last 5 years is when we talk to businesses about what are they considering when they're going to expand and hire. That's what it comes down to. So, for example, there's a company called Grayling Industries, which just bought a business in Mexico. And they wanted to bring the jobs back to the U.S. They could have gone anywhere in the U.S. And they chose Seaford, Delaware.
Hmm.
And they had experience through a sister company, ILC, with Delaware. And they found the workforce there to be fantastic. Kraft Foods also just brought a couple dozen jobs back from Mexico. They could have gone to any of their plants across the country. They chose Dover, Delaware. And so, I think these businesses have to understand that we're focused on what they're focused on. Quality of workforce, quality of infrastructure, cost of doing business, quality of schools, quality of life, those things. And then we also do have the incentives, but we really have to make sure that we're focused on all of those issues first.
Mike, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Before we get Matt in, I just wanted, we were talking about this before going on the air, and I talked about how frankly sad I am that Fisker Automotive declared bankruptcy in November. Looks like it's up for auction next week. And I know Delaware, you personally had high hopes for this electric car that could be built in Delaware.
Well, we did. And remember what happened. December of 2008, Chrysler closed their manufacturing plant in Newark. That's the one where I was earlier today that's now rising as a new health campus for the University of Delaware, the Star Campus. And then 6 months later, in June of 2009, General Motors closed their plant. And so that was just devastating to thousands and thousands of Delaware families. And at the time, we reached out to literally just about every car company in the world in 2009 to see if anybody would be interested in the plant. And nobody was. The best opportunity, except this company, Fisker, which had raised, they ended up raising over $1 billion of money from investors, hundreds of millions of dollars from the U.S. government. We did have hopes. We knew that, there's always a risk. And now we're sort of in this interesting period where we have a couple of companies bidding, so we don't know exactly where all that's going to, how that's going to play out.
Whether they're going to sort of take the pieces apart and go somewhere else, or maybe even
both bidders over the last few weeks have expressed an interest in using the Delaware plant, but I think it's premature to say what that might look like.
But do you see this as a cautionary tale, or this is just sort of how business sometimes happens? Things don't always work out.
Well, things don't always work out. You have to be thoughtful about it. I mean, in a similar way, the refinery in Delaware City had closed, and that has now reopened. Thank goodness, because it's a really important employer in our state. We've got the new Bloom Energy factory in Newark, which is employing a lot of people and growing. So, again, the primary focus, we believe, on economic development ought to be on things like workforce and the partnerships with institutions of higher education and infrastructure and the like. Sometimes you do have to do these incentives because otherwise you'll be left out. But you have to be thoughtful about them.
Let me get to Matt from Townsend, Delaware. Matt, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, thank you for having me today.
Sure.
The Star Center that the governor speaks of, there's a controversial power plant that's going in there. And as the governor speaks of greenhouse gases, the greenhouse gases that are going to be emitted, they'll be the biggest greenhouse gas emitter of the University of Delaware in the nation. We don't need this power plant. The lines are there from Chrysler, and the governor is pandering to the Star people, well, actually the services company that's going to run this, data services. He's pandering to them, giving them their own power source, and he's polluting Newark, and he sacrifices the environment for jobs quite often.
Well, Matt, let me give the governor a chance to respond to your call. Go
ahead.
Well,
I would respectfully disagree. As I said earlier, we have reduced emissions more than any other state in the country over the last 5 years. That's a basic fact. With respect to the proposed data center in Newark, that site was probably, if not the biggest industrial site in Delaware, is one of the couple biggest for generations. They made cars, they made trucks, and we have a chance to put people back to work. And so my philosophy is, when you have a chance to put people back to work in an economy which is a, you know, we're continuing to focus on that, And you can do so at a brownfield site in compliance with the environmental laws. Isn't that what we ought to be doing? Mm. And so my question is, when are we going to learn to stop saying no to jobs? And in this case, as I said, there are very clear environmental regulations. The plant will not be permitted to go forward. The data center will not be permitted to go forward if they're not in compliance with the regulations. That's just the way the law works. And so, you know, my view is, again, it's better at a brownfield site where the infrastructure already exists. Otherwise, you go out in the middle of nowhere where the infrastructure doesn't exist and to create and to sort of, you know, build on the farmland and the green spaces. And so you put people to work. You're in compliance with the environmental regulations. That's worth strongly considering. But in the end, they have to file their application with the Department of Natural Resources.
Matt, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We have a tweet from Jim. When will Delaware's medical marijuana dispensaries be up and running?
Good question. I don't have that off the top of my head. We're certainly working toward it, and but we can get the information certainly to you all. Maybe you can put it on your website. But
we can do that.
The folks in the Department of Public Health are certainly working toward it.
But they will be up and running sometime this year?
Yeah, I would think it would probably be this year. Yep, and I don't have the specific date, but they've been working on it for a while. We passed the law a couple years ago. We took a pause because of uncertainty with federal guidance from the Federal Department of Justice. That's been cleared up somewhat, and so we're moving forward.
Do you think Delaware – are you looking actually at Colorado and Washington State that have legalized marijuana for recreational use as a possibility of revenue for those states? Are you looking at them?
I'd put it this way. I mean, I don't think it's something that is going to happen anytime soon in Delaware. It's not something that I would support anytime soon. I think, you know, somebody, Justice Brandeis once said that the states should be laboratories of democracy. So Colorado and Washington are going forward. Everybody from across the country can keep an eye out. I have no idea what the unintended consequences might be. Maybe there won't be any. Maybe there will. But I just don't feel sufficiently confident in understanding what could happen to say it's a good thing to do in Delaware.
Do you think there might be unintended consequences for medical marijuana?
Well, I think we worked very carefully with the attorneys and with folks from around the country to try not to repeat some of the big mistakes that have been made elsewhere and to try to keep it controlled. And so I think we'll continue to learn as we have to do with everything.
And was that a hard issue to get passed in Delaware or not so hard?
It was certainly controversial. I do think the fact that the sponsors, Senator Margaret Rose Henry, Representative Helene Keeley, and others, spent a lot of time looking around the country to figure out what are some of the issues that we can avoid, what are some of the problem issues that we can avoid, how can we make this work for the patients, how can we keep a focus on public safety. You know, we've tried to meet all of those criteria, and I think, and hopefully we will, and I think, again, we'll continue to learn.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Governor Jack Markell, governor of the state of Delaware, took office in 2009 and recently served as chair of the National Governors Association. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, and get some more callers in at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Simpson Meadows, a retirement community in Downingtown, PA, in Chester County. Managed by Simpson Senior Services, a nonprofit with a long-standing tradition of care. Simpson Meadows provides personal care for senior adults, along with memory care, respite, and independent living. A specially designed personal care neighborhood staffed with licensed nurses provides assistance with daily tasks to help residents remain as independent as possible. More at simpsonmeadows.org.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we want to end this membership drive as soon as possible, and we can do it with your pledge of support. We get half of our money for our operating budget from listeners just like you, and that's the way we like it. Make a pledge right now by calling 1-888-345-9499. Pledge at our secure server, whyy.org. We have a special challenge from a generous supporter of WHYY and a fan of Radio Times. He will give us an additional $2,000 if we hear from 100 listeners during the show today. We thank him for that generous pledge. That's a lot of money. And it will be invested in the programs that you enjoy right here at WHYY, Radio Times, All Things Considered, Morning Edition, Fresh Air, and our newest show, The Pulse. We need to meet this challenge, and we can only do it if you make a pledge right now. Again, here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. Pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Delaware Governor Jack Markell and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Governor, we had a lot of calls that we just can't put on the air, but there's a theme. These are people that are out of work. They're looking for work. They're perhaps looking for retraining opportunities. Where can you send them?
Right, and these are very important questions. So the Delaware Department of Labor does a couple things. First of all, they're the ones, the employment and training people, help people get retrained. That's number one. Number two, they are the ones that keep the database of people who are looking for work, but they also work very closely with employers. And so over the last year or two, have worked with dozens and dozens of employers who are seeking employees. And we have a new resume building system that's first of all extremely easy to use, and that is also very easy for employers to use in terms of searching for people with particular skills. So the business services unit of the Department of Labor goes out, recruits employers, works with employers, and it's been amazing to me how many employers I've talked to over the last 6 months who have told me that they've used the Department of Labor to help them find people. So the Delaware Department of Labor would be the place to go.
I was reading a Pew study looking at undocumented workers, I think in a number of states, including Delaware, finding about 4% of the population undocumented, about 32,000 people living in the state of Delaware. Do those numbers sound about right to
you?
Could
be, yeah.
And I know there's some effort on giving what are sort of, I guess, driver privilege licenses, the thought of giving these people a form of driver's license.
Right. We've got a group that's looking at that issue, I think, as we speak. I think they've started already. There are a lot of employers in the state who particularly in the agriculture arena, who really value and depend upon these employees. And certainly we're hoping that at some point here, Congress will be able, the Senate and the House will be able to get together on some kind of legislation.
Well, as of this morning, John Boehner feeling that the Senate has passed an immigration bill that looks like the House is not going to move on their version of the bill. Just how frustrated are our governors, and I'm not talking just about Democratic governors, but Republican and Democratic governors about Congress and its inaction on some of these issues?
We're frustrated for sure. And, in this particular issue, I mean, this should not be a partisan issue. And I would really, I'd hope that, Speaker Boehner and other members of his caucus would understand that businesses in Democratic districts, businesses in Republican districts, so many want the same thing, which is we want this to be more predictable. It's important for employment for people who are, really just trying to build lives here, and we're hoping that they'll be able to get their act together.
But do governors think that they live in a different political world than members of Congress, for instance?
That's a good question. I think the answer is we do, for the most part, because we're really measured not on the basis of the quality of the speech that we've given. We're measured on things like, are we putting people to work? Are we improving schools? Are we being good stewards of the taxpayers' money? Those issues really are not Democratic or Republican. And, we may have different perspectives on how to achieve some of those things. But I think, governors generally feel that we have to really focus on getting things done. That being said, I will tell you, I think the congressional delegation from Delaware, Senator Carper, Senator Coons, and Congressman Carney, I feel we've got the best delegation in the country, because not only do they do a great job of what they do in Washington, they remember every day that their focus needs to be on putting Delawareans back to work. And those three, Carper, Coons, and Carney, over the last few years, have hosted quite a few job fairs, for instance. You wouldn't normally think about that as being in the purview of a congressional delegation, but they are totally hands, you know, sleeves rolled up, focused on putting people back to work.
And it doesn't hurt, I'm assuming, to have the Vice President of the United States be a former senator from Delaware, Joe Biden.
We're very proud to have the Vice President from Delaware.
Let me get, looks like Scott from Newark, Delaware, to join our conversation. Hi, Scott. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I would like to touch base on a 20-year post NAFTA deal that, you know, the U.S. had passed, and it's leading into the Trans-Pacific Partnership now. And I wonder how that would affect Delaware jobs and future for Delaware.
You know, I think it's a very interesting question. I'm not sure that I can give you a quantifiable answer.
What is this partnership?
Well, this is with basically Pacific countries.
Okay.
And so there's an interest in promoting the president and these other countries are interested in promoting additional trade. Here's what I know. We have, if you look at Delaware companies, we are increasingly focused on helping Delaware companies promote their exports. For so many companies, they have an opportunity to sell overseas, you know, it can add to their bottom line. Similarly, we have a lot of companies from overseas who are investing in Delaware. We have a pharmaceutical packaging plant from India that has a plant in Delaware City. We have a company from Korea that's planning to invest $100 million in Millsboro. So those are all positive things. I think what we want to make sure of is that when it comes to these kinds of partnerships, that other countries are adhering to environmental and to labor regulations, child welfare, and the like. So I think there continues to be a pretty good split of opinion about whether these are good things or bad things. Mm. I'm not sure what the evidence says. I think I know for sure that Delawareans exporting is a good thing for Delaware workers. I know that foreign investment into Delaware is a good thing, but I think we have to, you know, make sure that the competition is a fair competition.
Scott, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I want to quote something that was in the New York Times, June 30th, 2012. The headline says, "How Delaware Thrives as a Corporate Tax Haven," written by Leslie Wayne. She writes, "Big corporations, small-time businesses, rogues, scoundrels, and worse all have turned up at Delaware addresses in hopes of minimizing taxes, skirting regulations, plying friendly courts, or when needed, covering their tracks."
Yeah,
not true?
I think it's ridiculous, honestly. The reason that companies choose to incorporate in Delaware is we have the best understood corporate law in the country. It's been around for, you know, 100 plus years. People understand it. It's what they learn in law school. It's predictable. That's number one. Number two, we've got the best courts in the country, not just the Chancery Court, which is extremely well respected as a business court, but our other courts as well, year after year after year, are recognized as the best court system in the country. And if you're a general counsel, if you're the lawyer for one of these companies and you want to decide, you're advising where to incorporate, the lowest risk thing to do is say incorporate in Delaware, because we know if we have some kind of lawsuit, it's going to be heard by a qualified and competent judge. Number three, we've got the best division of corporations by far in the country. This is unlike any government agency you've ever heard about. Mm-hmm. And so we just, for instance, just a few weeks ago with one of the big snow events, there was a big corporate merger. I think it was in the airline industry. When it comes to these mergers, timeliness is incredibly important. And so one of our state employees in the division of corporations went well beyond the call of duty in the middle of the night in the snowstorm, I think, facilitated the merger happening. And the letters that we got afterwards from New York lawyers and the like said, you know, only Delaware could pull this off. And so this has been an issue that people have talked about for a long time. But I think what I just laid out is really the reasons that so many companies incorporate in Delaware.
Let me just one more thing from this article. She says there are 285,000 separate businesses, and they all have the same address, 1209 North Orange Street.
Right. I mean, companies like to incorporate. We have a fantastic servicing industry in Delaware, and they take care of the corporate governance issues. We value our premier position in corporate governance. And what we're trying to do more and more, of course, is we want companies to actually locate in Delaware, hire people in Delaware, and do their business in Delaware, not just the corporations piece.
And that's Governor of Delaware, Jack Markell, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments that you might have? I know that Delaware has gambling online. I guess you're one of, what, three states, New Jersey, Delaware, and
Nevada.
And I know other states. In fact, here in Pennsylvania, there's some talk in Harrisburg about doing that because of, I guess, the sort of arms race when it comes to states and gambling. How much does Delaware rely on casinos and gambling for revenue?
Well, in terms of overall, it's been a big part of our budget for years. But I will tell you, I mean, it's become more and more challenging because until several years ago, neither Pennsylvania nor Maryland had casinos.
That's right.
And so a lot of people who would come into Delaware to use our venues were from Pennsylvania or Maryland. Now those states have them. So it's been certainly much more competitive for the Delaware casinos. And so we're working now to try to get to a place where they can compete successfully for a long time to come. But it's certainly much different than it was a few years ago.
Is it worrisome to you that and some have called the revenues from gambling sort of a hidden tax, is that people you end up using that money to pay for services rather than having a direct tax for those services?
I guess you could have that philosophical
discussion.
But I think, I mean, it's been around for a long time in lots of places. It employs a lot of people, thousands of people in our state. People choose that they, want to go and entertain themselves there. We do, of course, focus on the some of the prevention of gambling issues and the like. But in the meantime, it's paying for teachers, mm-hmm. and it's paying for state police and protecting our environment and all kinds of important things like that.
How much has health care and just the cost of health care kept you up at night?
Well, it does because it's, been a very fast-growing part of our budget. But I think also that's why we have worked so hard really over the last year to try to come up with a way of really moving away from what I believe is a sick care system, moving toward a health care system. And the reason I say that is the incentives are really not aligned toward keeping people healthy. Providers, and this is, I'm not being disrespectful, I'm just saying this is the way the money works. Providers get paid more if they do more procedures. Well, that doesn't mean they're necessarily keeping people well. Hospitals get paid more if they're filling up beds. And so we have been working with the doctors, with hospitals and others over the last year to come up with a plan really moving away from this fee-for-service model. And I want to give them credit because they've really come to the table with some good ideas. We're already seeing hospitals in Delaware, including Christiana Care and others, who have focused on how do we keep, for example, the heaviest users of the emergency room out of the emergency room? And how can we make sure that they're, instead of going there for their treatment, they're going somewhere that's less expensive and more appropriate for them? So there are a lot of interesting models, and we expect to see more progress on this over the next few years.
And do you know how many people have signed up through the exchanges?
It's a couple, several thousand. It's less than we had expected it to be at this point, not surprisingly, given all the problems with the rollout of the website. And so there's more work to do.
And that's Delaware Governor Jack Markell, our guest in this first hour of Radio Times today. And I'm Marty Moscow, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. I talked to you about the Fisker car and, my sadness over its potential demise. I know we've done a couple of shows about the potential of a wind farm off the coast of Delaware. Where does that stand today?
That stands, frankly, it's a standstill mainly because the companies who would need to build the wind farms and build the, any factories associated with it don't believe that they can make money.
Oh, really?
I think that's why you're not seeing a lot of progress across the country. You're seeing a few things here and there, particularly in places where the cost of electricity is higher. But it's really not an industry that's taken off in North America in terms of offshore wind.
And hoping in the future that it will? I mean, once we sort of shake out some of our energy issues?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be great, assuming that the pricing, the price points are appropriate, assuming that we get the jobs associated with it. I mean, it would be nice. It'd be one thing to get the wind farm. It'd be a lot better to have the jobs that are associated with building the wind farm and everything, everything else. But I mean, certainly, the more that we can do to use renewable energy, it's great. That being said, wind does not blow all the time. It's sort of like the sun. It's not sunny all the time, and so it's not a great source of baseload energy supply. But the more that we can do in terms of renewables, the more that we can do in conserving. Some of the best money you can spend on energy is the money that you don't is the energy you don't have to use at all. And so we're doing a lot in that area as well.
How would you describe the state of our country's politics?
Well, I think it's pretty troubling. You know, it does seem – I read an article in the Atlantic magazine a few months ago about younger kids, you know, high school students becoming increasingly disaffected and disengaged, which I think is a problem. And so I've actually gone out to a few high schools over the last few months to talk to students because – I really believe that a lot of the decisions that get made in places like Dover or Harrisburg or Trenton or Washington are going to have a huge impact on their lives. And I think it's important that they engage. And we recognize that when things like the shutdown of the government in Washington happen, it really creates a problem for the public. Not only real problems, but public problems of perception about whether or not we can get anything done. And so certainly at the state level in Delaware, we pride ourselves on working together and getting things done. It's not to say that our politics is perfect, but we really try to put the interests of the citizens first. And the more that that can happen in Washington, I think the better off we'll all be.
Well, Governor Markell, thank you very much for coming up from Delaware and joining us on Radio Times today.
Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. And Governor Jack Markell, our guest, took office in 2009 and was until recently chair of the National Governors Association. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about this program. In fact, we have posted some pictures of the governor on our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.